Well, hello, this is Bob Sutherland from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from a number of sources, the News and Observer Business articles, though few these days, Wall Street Journal, Reuters, Bloomberg, the TBJ, the Triangle Business Journal. And today, the Federal Reserve foresees no interest rate hikes in 19. They expressed increasing concern about the slowing economic growth as it let interest rates unchanged Wednesday and showed little appetite for raising them in the near future. The Fed's fairly downbeat economic assessment is at odds with the White House's rosy economic projections, which have continued to predict stronger growth than most other forecasters say is likely. The Fed, in a statement at the conclusion of its two-day policy meeting, said growth of economic activity has slowed from its solid rate in the fourth quarter and cited slowdowns in household spending and business. Fed officials now expect economic growth of 2.1% for 19, down from 2.3% at forecast in December. The White House insists growth will be much stronger. They're saying 3.2% this year and 3% next year. The gap between Fed expectations for annual growth and White House forecasts has never been wider in the decade since the recession ended. After raising rates for five consecutive quarters, the Fed signaled it sees no further need to raise them again in the near future. Forecasting data released at the end of the two-day meeting show the typical member of the Federal Open Market Committee now expects not to raise rates at all this year. That's an abrupt halt to what had been a steady march of rate increases to the current range of 2.25% to 2.5%. The typical member now expects a single rate increase in 2020 and none in 2021. That is a sharp decline from what officials expressed in December, the last time forecasts were released. Then, Fed officials said they expected two rate increases this year and another in 2020. Now, Fed Chairman Jerome Powell, speaking at a news conference after the meeting, said the Fed expects the economy to grow at a solid pace in 19, but that it will be slower than last year's rapid acceleration. Powell went on to say that data arriving since December suggests that growth is slowing somewhat more than expected. Well, Google introduced a new video game service on Tuesday that allows people to play high-definition games instantly over the Internet, joining an industry-wide experiment to offer a so-called Netflix of gaming. The new service, called Stadia, will work for anyone with a fast internet connection and a computer, phone, or tablet. This service will also work with Google's Chromecast, actually it's Chromecast, an expensive dongle that plugs into television sets to stream videos. Google said Stadia would be released this year but did not announce a price. Hawaii would be the first state to ban most plastics at restaurants under legislation that aims to cut down ocean polluting waste. Dozens of cities across the country have banned plastic foam containers, but Hawaii's measure would make it the first state to do so. The liberal state has a history of prioritizing the environment, its mandated renewable energy use, and prohibited sunscreen ingredients that harm coral. A second proposal would prohibit fast food and full-service restaurants from distributing and using plastic drink bottles, utensils, stirring sticks, bags, and straws. Well, Stephen Dixon, a former Delta Airlines executive, was nominated by the White House to become the permanent head of the FAA. That's an agency facing scrutiny after two deadly crashes in less than 5 months. Dixon retired as Delta Senior Vice President of Flight Operations this fall. After 27 years at the company, he is former U.S. Air Force officer, Air Force Academy graduate, an F-15 fighter pilot, according to Delta. The FAA has been run by Daniel Elwell, the acting administrator, since 2018. Well, locally, more development may be coming to once rural area around the Durham-Wake County line. A proposed 562-home neighborhood would be built off Olive Branch Road, which connects 98 with Leesville Road in southeast Durham. The Durham Planning Commission voted 9-2 to recommend rezoning the land for the development. The city council still needs to approve it. Durham's housing supply cannot keep up with demand. The News and Observer and the Herald Sun have previously reported so. Mungo Homes, which has other developments in the Triangle, wants to build about 145 townhomes and 414 detached houses that will be up to 562 homes, ranging from $250,000 to $400,000. Planning Commissioner Carmen Williams said she drives that route to get to Briar Creek Shopping Area in Raleigh from 98. And she says development does need to happen in this area in order to create more livable space in the area. But Commissioner Nathaniel Baker called it leapfrog sprawl on the outskirts of Durham. Is it sprawl if our current plan says this is what we're supposed to be doing? Asked Commissioner Tom Miller. He said it is unreasonable to expect people who own large tracts of land to just sit on them. However, Miller noted that Durham doesn't have much farmland left. There are a few farms near the planned development, including a horse farm near the intersection of Leesville and U.S. 70. Well, back nationally, this is actually from the Los Angeles Times. Rupert Murdoch's 21st Century Fox has spun off various television assets, including the Fox News Channel and Fox Broadcast Network, to form a new company that will be known simply as Fox Corp, Fox Corporation. The spinoff, completed early Tuesday, is part of a multi-pronged process that will eliminate the 71.3 billion sale of the rest of Murdoch's entertainment company to Walt Disney. The company announced that it had finished the process of issuing shares in the new Fox Corp to investors of 21st Century Fox. Fox announced its board members, including former House Speaker Paul Ryan of Wisconsin. Other board members include Rupert Murdoch, Lachlan Murdoch, Ann Diaz, Chase Carey, Roland A. Hernandez, and Jacques Nasser. The new Fox is now a standalone publicly traded company. Its shares are listed on the NASDAQ market. Tuesday marked the first day of trading. The 88-year-old mogul from Australia and his family decided in late 17 to break up their entertainment empire, and Disney was Murdoch's preferred suitor. The Disney portion of the deal was expected to be complete late Tuesday when the Burbank entertainment giant swallows the bulk of the Fox assets. The new incarnation of Fox is a slimmer version of the old Fox. Its assets include Fox News Channel, Fox Business Network, two national Fox Sports Channel, FS1 and 2, the Fox Broadcasting Network, and Fox's chain of television stations. Well, while we are on entertainment, it's a report for more pay for streaming services. For the first time, a higher percentage of households in the United States subscribe to a digital streaming service than to traditional pay television. That's according to the results of a survey released by Monday by Deloitte. Deloitte's 13th annual Digital Media Trends survey found that 69% of respondents have at least one streaming video subscription, compared with 65% who have a traditional pay television subscription. The finding underscores the combined popularity of services such as Netflix, Hulu, and Amazon Prime as more consumers become disenchanted with the high costs associated with cable and satellite packages. The survey found that the average consumer subscribes to 3 streaming services and that binge watching continues to be a popular activity, with 91% of U.S. millennials saying they have watched 3 or more episodes of a show in a single sitting. Well, after years of criticism, this is from the New York Times, Facebook announced Tuesday that it would stop allowing advertisers in key categories to show their message only to people of a certain race, gender, or age group. The company said that anyone advertising housing, jobs, or credit, there are 3 areas where federal law prohibits discrimination in ads, that they would no longer have the option of explicitly aiming ads at people on the basis of those characteristics. The charges are part of a settlement with groups that have sued Facebook over the practices in recent years, including the ACLU, the National Fair Housing Alliance, and the Communications Workers of America. They also cover advertising on Instagram and Messenger, which Facebook owns. Now, Sheryl Sandberg, who is the company's chief operating officer, said in an interview that, quote, "We think this settlement is historic and will go a long way toward making sure that these types of discriminatory practices cannot happen." The company said it planned to carry out the changes by the end of the year and would pay less than $5 million to settle 5 lawsuits brought by the groups. A related complaint by the Federal Department of Housing and Urban Development is pending. A Facebook spokesman said the company was in discussions with the department to resolve the case. A HUD official did not respond to a request for comment. The change follows a year in which Facebook dealt with scandal after scandal related to the company's data sharing practices and its regard for privacy. In early 2018, the New York Times reported that Cambridge Analytica, that's a political research firm, had inappropriately harvested information from millions of Facebook profiles, largely because of Facebook's improper stewardship of user data. Facebook has been criticized for a data breach since late last year, compromising the accounts of millions of users. Several news organizations, including The Times and ProPublica, have also reported on the use of Facebook's targeting tools in ways that prevent members of certain groups, like women or workers over 40, from seeing ads. Now, Pauline Kim, a professor of employment law at Washington University in St. Louis, praised the changes but cautioned against overstating their significance. She says, "Taking the explicit ability to discriminate off the table is an important first step, but I don't think it solves the problem of the potential for bias serving of ads." Kim said, for example, that an employee could place an ad that it intended to show to both men and women, but over time, Facebook's algorithms could begin to show the ad primarily to men if it determined that men were much more likely to click on the ad. Well, Duke Energy will start construction next month on its proposed uptown tower, which the company now says will be 40 stories tall. The extra floor, Duke had previously pegged the tower's height at 39 stories, is likely to make it the 3rd largest building in Charlotte's skyline. The tallest building in Raleigh is the 33-story PNC Plaza. As developer Childress Klein filed for preliminary permits March 18, Duke released some additional information about its project plans and a high-resolution rendering of the building. Duke had given employees an update on the project last week through a posting on an internal website. Duke spokesman Neil Nissan said that with the expansion to 40 stories, the building is now projected to house about 4,000 Duke employees. The utility company expects about 1,000 skilled workers will be employed on the project during the 3 years of construction. Nissan confirmed that the architect is TVS Design of Atlanta and Duke had not disclosed a specific cost for the building. The site, directly across South Tryon Street from its Duke Energy Center headquarters, is currently home to a parking lot. Well, here's what North Carolina gets from Walgreens' 46-state $60 million settlement over Medicaid billing. 46 states, including North Carolina, have reached a settlement with pharmacy giant Walgreens over allegations that it violated the False Claims Act by hiking its Medicaid rates. North Carolina's take of the $60 million settlement is about $3.4 million. That's according to a statement from North Carolina Attorney General Josh Stein's office. The settlement is related to allegations involving Walgreens' discount drug program that is dubbed the Prescription Savings Club. Investigators had alleged that they had identified prices for certain prescription drugs sold through the PSC that were actually higher than what Walgreens usually charge for those same medications. In doing so, Walgreens obtained more money in reimbursements from the state's Medicaid programs than it was entitled to receive. That was according to a statement from the Attorney General's office. A National Association of Medicaid Fraud Control Units team conducted the settlement negotiations with Walgreens on behalf of the states. The North Carolina settlement agreement was reached by the Medicaid Investigations Division of the North Carolina Department of Justice and the North Carolina Division of Health Benefits. Well, one of the Triangle's most watched companies is going back to Wall Street for money. Less than a year after its IPO, a Marshfield-based healthcare concern wants to replenish its coffers with a big fundraiser. Liquidia, that's traded on the NASDAQ as LQDA, is going back to the street for more cash to fund its clinical trials. The company wants to sell an additional 3 million shares of its stock, which could gross another $58 million for the company. The offering is based on an assumed trading price of $16.72 a share, and that's the price at the close of markets on March 15. Each dollar increase or decrease in the assumed price would move the final figure by $2.8 million. Despite the impending dilution of its common stock, investors remain bullish on the company, as the company's stock is trading more than 7% higher from Monday close of $16.65 a share. Liquidia shares 52-week high topped $38 last year. It is a thinly traded stock with average volume of about 43,000 shares. That's according to Yahoo Finance. According to its prospectus, filed with the U.S. SEC, the company plans to use the additional funding mainly to complete a Phase 3 trial for its lead candidate, LIQ-861. The drug is an inhaled dry powder for the treatment of pulmonary arterial hypertension, currently in open-label Phase 3 trials. Well, WRAL, with former Greg Fischel no longer with the station, has posted a position for meteorologist and is weighing the look of its weather coverage going forward. The job posting does not say what days or day parts the new meteorologist will work. Fischel was chief meteorologist and a leading member of WRL's evening anchor team, generally working Monday to Friday. Now, Joel Davis, who is the station's vice president general manager, says that, quote, "We were intentionally vague in the job posting just to see who's out there." Meteorologists are critical members of television anchor teams. Weather is a driving force for ratings, and the talent of meteorologists and the expensive technology they use give stations a key way to attract consumers. Fischel was a dominant figure in the market, but abruptly left the station February 13 in what this station called a personnel matter. He had been with WRL since 1981 and took over as chief meteorologist in 1989 when the late Bob de Bartoleben retired. WRL has raised the profile of Mike Mays in the evenings and has the popular Elizabeth Gardner on the morning broadcast. We've got a lot of bench strength here. Mike Mays is really good. Elizabeth Gardner is really good. And we have some internal strength, Davis said. We cast the net far and wide, and we'll compare that to our internal strength. While the evening shows have traditionally been the most prestigious, Davis noted the heightened importance of morning news to the local stations. Local newscasts have been rising audiences as fewer people take daily newspapers and turn to TV for news, while the evening broadcasts are not as strong as previous decades. Morning news broadcasts are also owned for long periods of time, meaning more chances to sell local advertising and thus a vital source of revenue for the stations. Well, UNC Trustees Chair tells the Board of Governors, quote, stay in your own lane, unquote. A Raleigh lawyer who leads the ECU Board of Trustees says the Board of Governors of the university system ignored his board's nominations for new trustees and instead proposed a slate without a single female. The Board of Governors is expected to appoint multiple members to the ECU board this week, but Trustee Chairman Kieran Shanahan says the fact that ECU's nominations were disregarded matches a pattern of micromanagement by business and education leaders. The UNC board convenes this week at Appalachian and is expected to appoint several trustees to boards at system universities, including East Carolina, UNC Chapel Hill, and NC State. Shanahan, who is serving the last year of his second term and not seeking reappointment, said he is concerned that the Board of Governors in Chapel Hill ignored in toto ECU's nominees and proposed instead a different slate without input from ECU. He goes on to say there's been a disturbing trend of micromanagement by the Board of Governors, and we think, and I think rightfully so, trying to politely point out that everyone should stay in their own swim lanes. Nominations to boards are normally somewhat routine, but the Board of Governors is facing criticism from a group of North Carolina business leaders for becoming politicized in the light of some high-profile departures. A number of these critics have ties to the Democratic Party, but the criticism from Shanahan is significant, given his deep affiliation with the Republican Party. In fact, he was invited to the White House last week for a St. Patrick's Day event. One concern of Shanahan's was the potential lack of female candidates in the slate of candidates. East Carolina's board is composed of 12 members, plus the student government president. The current board has two female members. It's Deborah Davis, who's not eligible for reappointment, and Lee Fanning, who is nominated for reappointment but not included in the Board of Governors slate. Unbeknownst to us, the board on its own came up with its own slate, Shanahan told Triangle Business Journal on Wednesday. He says, the best we can tell, not only did they not follow the process in regards to nominations, but the other folk appear to have no vetting. And continuing that saga, some of North Carolina's business and educational leaders are speaking out against the UNC system Board of Governors, saying its heavy-handed approach is harming the system and state and sabotaging its ability to attract talent. A consortium of North Carolina business leaders has vowed they have public support behind a reform UNC system governance campaign. Almost 200 notable supporters have backed their campaign, which has brought advertisements in local media outlets. The list of supporters includes clothing designer Alexander Julian, Nelson Schwab, co-founder of Carousel Capital, George Watch Carr III, president of Cone Textile Group, Kel Landis, co-founder of Plexus Capital, James Meeser, the former UNC Chapel Hill chancellor, Smead York, former Raleigh mayor, Richard Venroot, former Charlotte mayor, Stick Williams, former chair of the UNC Chapel Hill Board of Trustees, and Raleigh attorney Wade Smith, also involved, are Jim Goodman of Capital Broadcasting and Fred Escherman, who founded Pharmaceutical Product Development, Chapel Hill developer Roger Perry, one of those spearheading the campaign, said the initiative hopes to demonstrate a united front against what is seen as micromanaging and bullying by the Board of Governors. Well, the Triangle may soon have a new public company on March 1st. Precision Biosciences, a Durham drug development company, filed papers with the SEC proposing to trade on the NASDAQ under the symbol of DTIL. According to its S-1 prospectus, it plans to raise up to $100 million in its IPO. The company has yet to price offering, which is being underwritten by J.P. Morgan, Goldman Sachs, Jefferies, and Barclays. Precision is an early-stage biotech company working to develop its Arcus, a genome editing platform to eliminate cancers and cure genetic diseases. The company is also working to incorporate the technology into food production. Precision plans to use the funding from the IPO to complete clinical trial phases 1 and 2A trials for its cancer treatment candidate, develop other candidates, and build out a manufacturing facility, as well as fund general corporate purposes and the development of its food platform. Well, Blue Cross Blue Shield of North Carolina is reporting historic revenue and paid claims for 2018, but its net income margins harrowed during what executives call a year of change and uncertainty. On March 1, the company reported its annual finances of $9.9 billion in total revenue. That's a 5.3% increase from the year before. Chief Financial Officer Mitch Perry says a key driver of the 18 performance was the Affordable Care Act line of business, which he says performed better than forecasted. 2018, he says, was another year of change and uncertainty in the health care. He goes on to say, as I've said before, we operate our company on a long-term basis. While we can see periods of short-term volatility, our goal is stability and consistency in our financial performance. The company saw a historic 4.1% decrease in the Affordable Care Act's plan rates for 19, the company's first decrease in the individual market in the last 25 years. Well, Durham reaps a big share of federal dollars flowing to North Carolina when it comes to federal spending. Durham nears the top of the state. That's according to newly released numbers from the North Carolina Military Business Center. That's a state-funded arm of the North Carolina Community College System. Data from fiscal 2018 shows that while Cumberland County tops the state with $1.32 billion in federal dollars, Durham is a close second at $1.29 billion, and Wake County comes in at number 5. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Money Matters. I do hope you've enjoyed it, and please be sure to listen next time. I'm Bob Sutherland, reading for the Reading Service. Today's reading of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency. They have served our community since 1974. They can be reached by dialing 919-781-1973.